A DNA test may end the faucet mystery. NATCA accuses the FAA of a double standard. And Chicago strikes a deal to privatize Midway Airport. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, October 3rd, 2008. In the end, it wasn't the Civil Air Patrol, airborne magnetometers and FLIR, or hobbyists using Google Earth, but rather the random decision of a hiker to leave a marked trail that has ended the search for Steve Fawcett. Authorities have confirmed that the wreckage of a single-engine plane found against a mountainside in California is that of the Belanca Decathlon in which the millionaire adventurer made his final flight on September 6, 2007. Aerial spotters discovered the wreckage late Wednesday near the walking trail where hiker Preston Morrow had found Fawcett's FAA pilot ID card, his Soaring Society of America membership ID, and $1,005 in cash. A small sample of human remains has been found by searchers, and authorities say it will be enough for a DNA test that may bring Peggy Fawcett the closure for which she's hoping. Searchers say the extent of the damage to the plane is consistent with controlled flight into terrain. So far, the NTSB will say only there was a post-crash fire. The wreckage is to be removed by helicopter today and taken to a secure location for examination by investigators. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association charges the FAA supervisor at Flying Cloud Airport near Minneapolis, Minnesota, with a brazenly callous move on September 22nd, when he allegedly turned his back on a trainee he was supervising to answer a cell phone call. The union says his trainee then mistakenly cleared an airport vehicle to cross a runway in front of a departing aircraft. FAA spokeswoman Elizabeth Isham Corey acknowledged the apparent operational error and says the FAA is reviewing the incident. She added the plane was stopped on the runway at the time and the truck was clear of the runway well before the aircraft started its ground roll. The union's Great Lakes Regional VP Brian Zalonis says that's not the point. Quote, "This is another case of FAA supervisors flaunting the agency's blatant and hypocritical disregard for safety. We're waiting with bated breath to see what, if anything, the FAA will do," unquote. Zalonis accused the FAA of a double standard, saying if it was a controller who made that error, he'd be suspended or fired. Corey responded, quote, "We treat all our employees fairly," unquote. Furthering its reputation for creativity in disposing of its airports, Chicago's Daley administration reports reaching a landmark agreement to privatize Midway Airport. Crane's Business Weekly reports the $2.52 billion winning bid represents the low end of a range predicted by market observers. But then this has also turned out to be a bad couple of weeks to get big deals financed. Robert Poole, director of transportation studies at the Reason Foundation, commented, quote, "That's actually more than I was expecting under current circumstances. It's a bet on the long-term future of Chicago," unquote. The winning bidder is Midway Investment and Development Corporation, a consortium consisting of YVR Airport Services Limited, City Infrastructure Investors of New York, and John Hancock Life Insurance Company of Boston. Mayor Richard M. Daley commented, quote, "As the first privatization of a major American airport, this transaction will provide unprecedented benefits for the traveling public, the airlines, and the taxpayers of Chicago," unquote. The 99-year lease still needs approval by the City Council, the FAA, and the Transportation Security Administration. The city hopes to get FAA approval by year's end. For Southwest Airlines and Midway's other carriers, the deal includes a 25-year agreement that caps landing fees below the current level for 6 years and then allows them to grow at the government's core inflation rate. The city will continue to provide the police and fire protection at the airport. Too bad Daley couldn't have privatized Meigs Field. The FAA says regional airline American Eagle flew its planes in violation of federal weight and balance guidelines at least 19 times in the past 5 months. Citing sources in the aviation industry, ABC News reports the FAA's investigation began after the airline self-reported two incidents in which planes may have taken off outside accepted weight and balance envelope. No incidents resulted, but weight and balance is critical on smaller regional jets. Overloading and an out-of-range aft CG were blamed in part for the January 2003 crash of a U.S. Airways Express Air Midwest Beechcraft 1900D on takeoff from Charlotte, North Carolina. That accident killed all 21 on board and injured one person on the ground. American Eagle admits it's investigating several cases in which planes may have flown in violation of weight and balance, and that the faults were caused by discrepancies between manual baggage loading lists and the computer program used to calculate weight and balance. ABC quotes sources within the FAA in reporting the agency is now determining whether to impose fines or penalties on American Eagle. The airline also faces fines after a TSA inspector gained access to parked planes at Chicago O'Hare by climbing avionics probes on the sides of fuselages earlier this year. The resulting inspections for damage caused cancellation of 40 flights. Up next on ANN, the FAA takes ADS-B comments again. A station error is down in Anchorage. And some Northwest employees may face long commutes after the merger. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 3rd. I'm Paul Plack. The FAA is ready to take public comments on a controversial plan to require that all aircraft be equipped with ADS-B. No, you're not experiencing deja vu. This time the agency has some changes to run by you. On October 5th of last year, the FAA issued a notice of proposed rulemaking regarding performance requirements for avionics related to what's called ADS-B out, a new GPS-based transponder system it wanted to require on all aircraft by 2020. The comment period was ultimately extended until March 3rd of this year. The comments received overwhelmingly opposed the requirement. Many negative comments came from general aviation circles and pointed out that a big selling point for ADS-B had been incoming traffic and weather information delivered to pilots, and that was no longer being proposed. And there were complaints that the need to equip relatively inexpensive aircraft with both traditional radar transponders and ADS-B was not economically feasible. Of more than 1,400 comments received, only 101 were positive. The FAA's Aviation Rulemaking Committee, which came up with the original proposal, has since made 36 recommendations to address the comments from the original NPRM. The new comment period's open till November 3rd. You can find a link to the Rulemaking Committee's report at the bottom of the text version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. Two people were killed when their Cessna 206 apparently lost engine power shortly after takeoff from Merrill Field in Anchorage, Alaska on Wednesday and hit a building just west of the airport. The Anchorage Daily News reports the aircraft had taken off from runway 25 just before 11:40 a.m. Wednesday morning. The pilot radioed the tower immediately afterward with an engine problem, and the plane was cleared to land on any runway. The plane hit the roof of a one-story office building at the corner of 8th Avenue and Orca Street, adjacent to the north-south runway at Merrill. Witnesses said the plane fell from the sky in a nose-down attitude after attempting a very steep turn back toward the airport. Anchorage Police Sergeant and 30-year pilot Ted Smith told investigators he was working on his own plane at the airport when he heard the Station Air's engine make an ugly noise. Quote, "When he started to bank left, he overshot the runway, so he increased the angle of bank and eventually got into an accelerated stall," unquote. The building is owned by City Electric Incorporated, a local utility contractor. Fortunately, it was unoccupied at the time of the crash. The merger of Delta and Northwest Airlines, whenever it finally becomes final, is expected to result in a quick realignment of equipment to position aircraft on routes they can fly most efficiently. But in the short term, the shuffle will not only relocate planes, but reassign personnel to new cities and in some cases make for long commutes. The Minneapolis Star Tribune reports both carriers' fleets will operate separately for about the first year of the merger, until the FAA issues a joint operating certificate. But Northwest crews, who've been trained on aircraft that are largely foreign to Delta, will need to follow the jets in which they're rated wherever Delta decides to put them. For example, if Delta chose to move Northwest's 747s to Atlanta from their current home in Minneapolis, flight attendants would have to fly to work. On the hardware side, many observers expect Northwest's DC-9s will be going away because they're less fuel efficient than Delta's newer 737s. The same is likely true for Northwest's 747s, which cost far more to operate than Delta's 777s. And then there's the issue of the Airbus planes owned by Northwest. Delta is all Boeing at this point, so the long-term fate of the European planes is anybody's guess. But please, no wagering. As Minnesota prepares to mourn the loss of Northwest's corporate headquarters, it's also preparing a welcome. Southwest says it will begin service from Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport to Chicago Midway in March of next year. CEO Gary Kelly says, quote, "Minneapolis-St. Paul's geographic location complements the vast Southwest Airlines network really well. We've studied and been interested in serving this very popular market for quite some time, and we look forward to bringing our low fares and legendary customer service to the people of Minnesota," unquote. Southwest may sense an opportunity to capture some market share away from Northwest. The airport is also served by Midwest Airlines, which recently announced significant service cutbacks and the outsourcing of most of its routes. Jeff Hamill, executive director of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, commented, quote, "One of the most frequent questions I've been asked over the years is, when is Southwest Airlines coming to Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport? Today, I can finally give people the answer we've been working toward, very, very soon." The Metropolitan Airports Commission stands ready to assist the airline in establishing and growing service to Minnesota, unquote. Southwest promises more details on service from Minneapolis when we get closer to March. Still ahead, airlines were more punctual in August. Boeing sells a few more Globemasters. And NASA invites students to invent moon tools. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, October 3rd. I'm Paul Platt. Flights operated by the nation's largest airlines arrived on time at a higher rate in August than in both the previous month and in August of 2007. The latest air travel consumer report was released yesterday by the U.S. Department of Transportation. According to information filed with the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, the 19 carriers reporting had an overall on-time arrival rate of 78.4% in August. That's up from August 2007's 71.7% and July of 2008's 75.7%. Overall, 1.6% of scheduled domestic flights were canceled in August. That's also down both month-to-month and year-to-year. Hawaiian Airlines continued its streak of posting the best on-time numbers, with 92.3% of its flights arriving within 15 minutes of scheduled times. Regional carrier Pinnacle was a close second at 89.6%. SkyWest was in third at 85.7%. Bringing up the rear, JetBlue at 64.7%, Comair at 67.4%, and American Airlines at 70.6%. Comair posted four of the five worst-performing flights, including two which were not on time once during the entire month of August. Those flights are 5610 from Baltimore to New York JFK and 5109 from Cleveland to JFK. You can find more of the good and bad in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. As Boeing scratches for any new customers that might allow it to save the C-17 Globemaster production line from shutting down, every little bit helps. Boeing announced this week that an international consortium of 10 NATO members, joined by Partnership for Peace Nations, Sweden, and Finland, have signed a memo of understanding to acquire three C-17 Globemaster III long-range cargo jets. The agreement sets the stage for NATO's first major defense purchase in 30 years. Two of the advanced airliners would be purchased from Boeing, while a third would be provided by the U.S. Air Force. The aircraft would be assigned to NATO's heavy airlift wing and jointly operated from Papa Air Base in Hungary. Delivery of the first aircraft could happen as early as spring of 2009. Think Flying Club, only on a bigger scale. Each participating nation will pay for a portion of a C-17 rather than an entire aircraft and then share the pooled fleet. The 12 countries participating are Bulgaria, Estonia, Finland, Hungary, Lithuania, the Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Romania, Slovenia, Sweden, and the United States. NATO does not currently own a heavy lift capability and frequently contracts with nations such as the U.S. and Russia for assistance. The MOU calls for Boeing to establish a factory at Papa Air Base to provide C-17 logistics support under the current Globemaster support partnership. On the eve of NASA's 50th anniversary, the agency has announced a new contest that challenges college-level students to design tools or instrument packages that could be used on the next generation of human-driven moon rovers. Students will have their chance to engage in NASA's return to the moon by designing equipment that will help the astronauts accomplish tasks on the lunar surface. Living on the moon for extended periods is going to involve getting around in the dark, communicating with orbiting spacecraft and with Earth, and working in an environment filled with highly abrasive dust, which can damage spacesuits and vehicles. In this competition, students will be invited to design tools and instruments that can withstand the sharp-edged particles, and they could earn an internship at a NASA facility in exchange. The contest is open to full-time students enrolled in accredited post-secondary institutions such as universities, colleges, trade schools, community colleges, and professional schools in the U.S. or its territories. Individuals or teams may apply, and interdisciplinary teams from across departments and institutions are encouraged. To participate, students must submit a notice of intent to NASA by this December 15th, with final papers due May 15th, 2009. Find more details in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. And finally, after 7 months of keeping it to herself, a New Jersey woman has come forward with details of a really creepy encounter with a male flight attendant. If you've ever felt anxiety in an airliner after they close the door, imagine a flight like this. Gina Roussette told WCBS-TV News in New York that she boarded a JetBlue flight for a trip home after visiting family. As she tells the story, a friendly conversation with flight attendant Dane Arokium took a disturbing turn before the plane even left the ground. Quote, "He literally told me he was going to have nobody sit next to me because I was all his. I was definitely trapped," unquote. She says that after takeoff, things got worse. Quote, "He kept telling me that he wanted me. At one point, he said, 'You know you want me.' And he was always grabbing himself all the time," unquote. She says Arokium twice tossed his cell phone onto her tray table, set to display nude photos of himself. When her attempts to discourage him failed, Roussette says she escaped to the bathroom, but Arokium followed, making vulgar comments through the door. When she returned to her seat, she says Arokium grabbed her buttocks. 7 months later, Roussette shared her story with authorities, and Arokium was arrested on charges of obscene and indecent exposure and for making a lewd, obscene, and indecent sexual proposal. Court documents say Arokium confessed to showing the nude photos and even of making sexual advances, but he denied grabbing the woman or harassing her. The U.S. Attorney's Office says Arokium has yet to enter a plea. He had no comment when contacted by WCBS. JetBlue says Arokium no longer works for the airline. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Steve Borowski, manager of the Valkyria Airport in Florida, which is now moving ahead without its antagonistic advisory board. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.